The Morning Huddle Construction Show is fortunate to have 5 sponsors for season 7, helping us to spread the word and create positive change in the construction industry. And we want to give a shout out to each of them and thank them now. First is Katz Abosch. This is a middle market accounting firm with a deep specialization in construction, tax, audit, accounting, fantastic group of people. Next is Lawrence Law. This is a boutique law firm that works with contractors and helps them with their day-to-day legal needs, as well as all of their most significant legal challenges that they might run up against. Lawrence Law. Then we have Sandy Spring Bank, which is a regional bank in Maryland, with a group of people who really understand what the needs of construction businesses are and who partner with you to achieve your financial aims. So Sandy Spring Bank. And then we have Marsh McLennan Agency, bonding and insurance professionals really just have unparalleled insight into the construction industry. They're the best in the business. And then lastly, we have Genesis AEC. And Genesis is a full service architecture, engineering, and construction management firm with a deep specialization in the life sciences industry. We also happen to have some of their folks help us with guest hosting from time to time. It's Morning Huddle time, and today is one of those time-to-times that we've got Tom Hughes joining us from Genesis AEC as my co-host. Tom, how you doing, man?
Good morning, Huddlers. What's happening, Chad? How you been, buddy? It's been a minute since we hosted together.
I figure you just finished celebrating the Eagles Super Bowl win. It's been a little over a month and a half, and I figure you're just getting squared away.
Just finally recovering, coming off of the euphoria of Super Bowl 59, which
and now we're into the you know, I gotta tell you, the NFL offseason news is it's really frustrating to follow, where, you know, I open up and I can't help it. This is why they consistently pump it out. It's like, you know, such and such makes terrible decision in first round of draft, and why am I opening it? There's a fake, it's all theoretical.
Yeah. Or, you know, the Eagles are considering parting ways with this all-star linebacker, and it's like a guy that, you know, they had on the practice squad that, you know, they picked up somewhere else, and it's constant clickbait.
I feel so bad for the players in the off season, because the stuff that they have to deal with, you know, in terms of headlines, it's so ridiculous. It's so, you know, pumped up and BS.
They get plenty of hazard pay for that, Chad.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. So what's going on in your world, man? What's good? What are you working on these days?
You know, the weather's getting nicer. Spring is in the air. We're getting to golf season. I'm working on my golf game.
Oh, nice. Love it. Yeah, I got to do that.
You know, we got a lot of stuff happening here at Genesis. You know, we've got a nice backlog of projects upcoming and in process. So we're going to be busy for a while.
That is always great news.
Yeah.
It's a very, very interesting construction economy right now. It depends on who you talk to as to what they're experiencing. Are you guys projecting any negative impact from the current economic climate / you know, questions hanging out there?
We're just starting to kind of scratch the surface of that and seeing what projects are coming up and how, you know, any potential tariffs or negative geopolitical impacts are going to affect projects from, you know, like an escalation standpoint. But it's all speculative right now. You know, it's like anything else. You got to plan for it and hope that you've planned the best. And actually, you know, we're going to get into a lot of talk about planning today with our guest. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, agreed. There's a lot of gamesmanship going on the geopolitical, you know, environment, and just like you said, everything is speculation, but it has to be, you know, considered, right, as a part of the decision making process. Yet, what I am hearing, very similar things, where in general it's like, hey, what did happen is a logjam of projects did get unstuck post-election and things started moving forward, which is great. I'm glad to hear that you guys have a nice, healthy backlog and plenty of projects coming down the line to look at. I think, at least so far, not massive impacts on the construction economy with other than just, head scratching.
Yeah, the one thing you worry about is that impacts become so severe that projects start to go on hold. And that doesn't help anybody.
Well, it's what happened with the interest rate environment and then the, the nail biting leading up to the election and all that kind of stuff. And we could use just, a year of normal would be super cool.
Yes, correct. Just to point out Stacy's comment, Stacy, yes, we did plan on matching today. He went quarter zip, I went hoodie. So it wasn't too matchy-matchy.
That's right. Yeah, that's a fair statement. I love all your matching today. Very cute. Very cute. Let's bring on Jason. So Jason Schroeder is – Jason, how you doing, man? Thank you so much for being on the huddle.
Good, good. Thanks for having me. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Thanks for joining dark and early at 6:07 a.m. in Arizona. We were talking about yesterday – how Arizona is a, I admire Arizona for saying, you guys change your clocks, do whatever you want to do. We're going to hang out. We're going to, so you flip back and forth between mountain and Pacific, but for you, it's always the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I admire it. I really do. I think we all need to flip over.
Well, I'm glad to be here. So super excited.
Yeah, no, it's so I'll take a moment and introduce Jason and ask you to expand a little further, but Jason is, a fellow, positive change in the construction industry, guy. I mean, I've been reading Jason's stuff for, several years now, I think three or four years. I've been, following your stuff pretty consistently. Jason's got a best-selling book, called Elevating Construction Superintendents. It is a fantastic book. He's also written, I think, like 12 or 13 other books and is just, constantly pumping out fantastic content, runs field-focused training and leadership training and tact training and all kinds of fun stuff for the industry. And in his group, Elevate Construction is, legit, man. I love what you're doing, and I very much am honored to have you on the show, man.
Well, yeah, awesome. Jason, thank you. Very prolific. He's like the Beatles of lean construction. He's just putting out content in a short period of time.
Yeah, it's quantity, maybe even over quality, I think.
Well, but they all can't be a hit, Elevating Construction Superintendents really is a hit.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that seems to do well. So thank you for the introduction. So one quick thing about me is that as flawed as I am, and I see Jen Lacey's on the phone or on the group here, I take cues from her on how to be a better human being and a better influencer. But our purpose really is to honor the workers and foremen in the field and to help leadership teams get training so they can go home to their families. So we're good people. We make mistakes, but we're trying our best over here, and I appreciate the introduction. So,
yeah. Well, thank you again for choosing to spend your time with us this morning.
Absolutely.
You certainly have plenty of other things going on. So let's talk about, I think we can cover a lot of ground between, now and the next 30 minutes or so. But I'd really like to start with this idea that the field should be elevated. The field roles in construction should be elevated. And your background is with, a huge general contractor, construction management company, having the background that you have at I guess Hensel Phelps, is it okay to bring that
up? Yes, that's super fine. Yeah.
Right. I'm sure developed a clear perspective for how things ought to go and how things, shouldn't go. Talk about how companies ought to view the field, how construction companies ought to view the field inside their business.
So I love that question. So the field really is the product. If you And I know all of you know this, so I'm preaching to the choir here, but you know, if you go back to the Rich Dad, Poor Dad books, he always talks about, you know, there's the CEO, the COO, maybe even president of the company. And then you have legal, finance, marketing, you know, risk assessment. But he's like, he always says, don't forget about the product. And if you really think about it, the product that we offer in the field as a construction company is as the rhythm keeper and the caregivers for the trade partners. And our skills, like the core product, is our ability to take the plan, what's on the plans, what's theoretical, and actually make it manifest itself in the physical in the field. And that's just so invaluable. So forgetting about the field in construction would be like Apple turning their backs on iPhones or iPads, which I'm not saying construction is doing. I'm just saying like it's such a key part. And I don't know if you were wanting me to get into this, but I have such respect for Hensel Phelps as a company that supports the field, right? They make you, whether people like it or not, be a field engineer, office engineer, project engineer, assistant superintendent, and then you can go in as a PM or a superintendent or as a project superintendent, right? The people are forced to go through and do that training and have that experience in the field. And I will say just two quick points in relation to this is one is we actually tracked people's careers, what happened when they were field engineers and when they weren't, and people greatly accelerate their career and improve their careers when they have field experience. And the other thing is from an elevation standpoint, I love superintendents and your comment is correct. We do need to step up. We've got to get rid of the, oh, I can't use a computer. I've right. got holes in my pants, banana peels falling out of my truck, you know, like image, you know, like we're just as cool as all you project managers out there and we can use computers and you need us and we need you. And so like, really, this is should be the perspective. So that's my take on it.
I absolutely love that. And I think you know, the best practice is and should be that if you're a general contractor and you're watching this right now and you're creating a path for people to join your firm without spending time in the field right out of college or wherever they come from, right? Trade school or college or whatever, you're missing the boat. I think there really is. It's essential to understand what the real work is, and the real work is in the field, and it's interfacing with the subcontracting community. Tom, what were you going to say? I'm
sorry. Yeah, and there was two things that Jason hit on right there. One was, you know, sort of the rotational program of having, you know, young people coming out of school and getting them into different positions, you know, working as a construction manager or superintendent, working as an assistant project manager, maybe working in engineering, working commissioning. You know, we try and do that here is, you know, get people who are willing to rotate around because it helps you see projects from every angle and you gain not only an understanding of why people are doing things a certain way, but you also get an empathy towards those positions and you understand where they're coming from. The other thing that you mentioned, and I wish I wrote it down because now I lost my train of thought. We'll come back.
I know how it goes, man.
It happens all the time. Yeah,
yeah, it's normal. That's sorry. Normal. We'll go back and we'll capture it later. We'll play.
We'll
it
edit that in post.
Yeah, we'll edit that. No, we won't. Yeah, it'll stand just as it is. So one of the concepts that you I know are super passionate about and that plays a major role, I think, in elevating the superintendent is the idea of tact planning. Can you talk about tact and overall what lean methodology you, encourage superintendents to learn and embrace?
Well, if I get to talking too long, then kick me on the shin if you don't mind.
Yeah, no problem. I can do that digitally.
So let me tell you a quick real. Actually, I'll do three different things, and I'll probably forget one of them. So Tom feels like he's a part of the
perfect,
like part of the group here. So like, I'm sorry, Tom. Anyway, so my wife Kate and our CEO and I'm really more her husband than anything, but I had a part in putting her father's company out of business. He was an electrician, and I was on a major prison, and I was not in prison. I was helping to build a prison. And
thank goodness.
Yeah. I tell people Kate and I met in prison. Anyway. So I was assigned to track any defects for this contractor. And instead of helping them out, basically the work that I did had the effect of putting them out of business. And I remember those days and the difficulty that I had in the family, being married to Kate and the whole nine. And my perspective went from, hey, like, let's get going with trade partners with subcontractors to, it's our job as the general contractor to support and help these wonderful people. And from a company standpoint, these assets. So that's where my mind is. And I have never liked the rushing and pushing and panicking of people. I grew up in a culture where the philosophy was, there's no job or duty so important or urgent that it cannot be performed the safe way, right? So these events earlier on in my life were very formative, I think is the way you would say that. And so as soon as I saw the SIPs, short interval production scheduling at Hensel Phelps that they did on the Pentagon, and understood the concept that you can actually schedule in a way that helps trade partners to go from zone to zone to zone in a respectful manner and still do better on your schedule, I was hooked from day one. Story number two, when we started Elevate and we started in 2021, big leap, right? We had the book, Elevating Construction Superintendents. We set out to teach superintendents, and this is a real thing. I'm being honest. We failed. We realized immediately that you can't help superintendents without fixing the systems that they use. That was real. Nobody on our end decided at any time to go in, start learning about and scaling tax planning. Not once, not even a little bit. I mean, I knew about it and had been experimenting with it and ran jobs that way, but we were like, hey, CPM, let's hop on in the car. And we found out the CPM was a serial killer. We don't have to talk about that too much here.
Warned me. You're like,
to talk about it. But the bottom line is, our group, and we have about 55 people in our lean tact scheduling and production planning group, we can help clients accelerate their schedules and do better and recover from impacts without ever hurting trades. And so the key point there is, for me, never hurting trades, never hurting trades, never hurting trades.
Yeah.
And so that's the reason that it's such a big deal, and it's scaling really well. The other thing that I'll say, I got to give a shout out to all my lean homies out there, is that tact, like, well, let me just say this. Last Planner and Scrum and all these wonderful systems marry to tact. It's like you met a guy or gal or whatever it is that you are really attracted to. And this person, he or she, like, cleans up after themselves. They're financially responsible. They're really kind, right? And then you find out that their parents are rich. Like, that's exactly what it's like. Like, I want Last Planner to get rid of his or her abusive spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend and marry this beautiful partner, this tact, because they work so well together with peanut butter and jelly. So those are my three reasons, but it really comes down to taking care of trades. Like, it sounds like a tagline. It sounds like some business coach said, hey, you've got to make people believe this, Jason, but that's really why we do this, is because we, like, literally honor and cherish those people out in the field. And we've got, like, you and everybody else on this call to help them. Oh, let me say one last thing. Sorry. I know I'm talking too much. I've got to stop that. But you've got brilliant builders, but if they don't have the right system, then they won't do anything with it, right? They won't, like, they're still going to struggle. You could have Maui, the demigod, go run a project and still fail unless you have the system with it. So the way we see our people, like when you see influencers out there, you all with business or Jen Lacey and Jesse Hernandez with people and, you know, everybody in their different spheres, we see ourselves as the folks that are attempting to fix the system to bless the people. So TAC does that for us.
That's awesome, man. I love it. And I think, you know, what I'm most attracted to in all of that is this idea that being the caregivers, the caretakers for the trade contractors, and making sure that you never hurt the trades through the course of it, because for 100 reasons, but just for a very self-serving reason, if you have a trade contractor that is hurt on your job, that is a recipe for failure on your job. You're going to have overruns. You're going to have threats. It's going to turn combative very quickly.
Yes.
People get into survival mode, and there's a lot, there are a lot of things that, norms, I should say, in the industry that I think set trade contractors up for adversarial relationships,
yes,
with their general contractors from the start.
Yep.
And what I've seen is, and I've even marveled at, some of the best superintendents I've ever met can take this situation where a trade contractor was, you know, bought out below their means to make money on the project, where they're kind of coming in with a profit recovery plan, i.e. a game plan for, you know, screwing people over to make money, and somehow magically, find a way to collaborate effectively with those folks. The superintendent can make or break that.
Yeah.
Kind of partnership. I want to take this up a layer and talk about the role of the field in pre-construction. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. I rarely see general contractors effectively collaborating with superintendents in the pre-construction phase. Yeah. Whether it's resource constraint or mentality, driven, there's just, the super's kind of handed a project way after, key decisions are made. Things. How would you like to see that work? And what's the feasibility of field leadership involvement in pre-con?
Well, would you mind? I just recognized a pattern. Would you mind if I did a three-part pattern here real quick to lead into that question?
No, I'd love it if you did.
So first of all, I want to pick up on something that Jen just typed in, that we need the trades more than they need us. And I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir again. But the data shows that, and I'm going to say words that I don't say, but that I've heard. The data shows that it's not general contractors pulling the job through the knot hole in spite of, and I'm going to say the word, but I don't believe this, in spite of stupid trades.
Right.
The data shows that the trades are pulling the job through the knot hole in spite of the stupid systems that general contractors put on them. And I'm a general contractor, so I'm not anti-general contractor. The bottom line is that, and you all know this, is that the superintendent and the PM are the rhythm keepers. It's like you're in an orchestra, mm-hmm. and every trade partner is a musician, and they know how to play their instrument, and nobody needs to tell them how to play their instrument, but it's the rhythm that we must keep, and it is the resources that we must provide. And so the superintendent is the rhythm keeper and the project manager is the resource provider. Not to simplify it too much, they do much more than any of that. And I'll say that one other thing here real quick, and I'm tying a lot of stuff together, but you provided a nice, beautiful pattern. Field engineering isn't just about providing a great experience, but our industry, and this is not a shock and awe statement, our industry does not have a people availability problem, in my view. We have a lack of diversity, lack of inclusion, and we have a lack of training problem. There are thousands upon tens of thousands of people out there that are ready to go to work for construction companies, but because the internal training department doesn't have ways or means to train people without experience, general contractors, construction companies are not getting the people that they need because they're not able or willing to train them. And when we do that training, and I just want to make this point, this is now we're going to start the pattern that you tied me into intentionally or accidentally. Field engineering mentally programs you to take care of the craft. It wires you that way. It wires you to visualize things in 3D, to be able to create drawings, to read drawings, to understand quality control and safety. But it is impossible in my mind to go out there and stand in the mud with a trade partner, a foreman or worker as a field engineer and ever learn to disrespect them. It's just not a thing. I can't do it. Yeah. I could never get there. If I'm with you in a trench, I respect you.
Yeah.
And that wires your mind. Yeah. And then that goes to the second point, that however much we love the trades, the workers and the foremen, is how much they will love our building. That's it. I tell people all the time, and this is not a shock and awe campaign, when I was a superintendent, and I'm not bragging at all, we had no graffiti anywhere on bathrooms. We didn't have pee in bottles and we didn't have any problems. Like, because I spent time with them every morning. I did the orientation with them. I shook their hands. I provided a wonderful environment and loved them. Love is really the right word. I use respect a lot. I think I'm making a mistake there. It's really love. And I want to use this same pattern in pre-con. Pre-con is not, and you'll see lean folks out there in the industry doing a great work, tearing down command and control of people, which I really appreciate and love. Pre-con is not supposed to be predictive planning that forces people into a schedule. Pre-con is not supposed to be command and control. Pre-con is not supposed to be, hey, I made a plan, chuck it over the fence. Pre-con is a third way to love and care for trade partners. Because one of the things that I hate is seeing trades in a conference room in a last planner meeting and attempting to make commitments on the weekly work plan, but not being able to because they're like, I don't have the RFI back. I don't have the materials. You're going to have to talk to my shop. And it's just so demoralizing. And so the data shows, and you all are probably huge fans of the book, How Big Things Get Done. The data shows clearly that projects typically don't go wrong. They start wrong. And so what I advocate in pre-construction is a couple of things. We've got to start planning from day one. Procurement is a day one item. It's really not that hard to get materials for a construction project if you start early enough and if you track it weekly. It's just not that hard. People are tactical waiters. Oh, I'm waiting for the design. I'm waiting. Can't wait. We've got to start, right? We got to release that switchgear. We got to go. Supporting the design team, and then by mid-design development, we got to have the super and PM in there. If we don't have that, we're in trouble. And creating the TAC plan, the zone maps, the logistics plan, managing the procurement log, the risk and opportunity register, designing the trailer, doing these things logistically so that we have the first planner system queuing up and supporting the last planner system and honoring the last planner system. Now, here's the objection. People will say, I can't afford it. It's not something that I can do. We don't have extra people.
Right.
I get it. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't work. And just because you may not be able to do it today doesn't mean that it's not statistically the root cause of your project failures. Bottom line is you have to have an amazing pre-construction effort to support the last planner. If you think about it, it's disrespectful to not have a first planner system, to be like, hey, trades, we didn't plan this. We didn't manage the supply chain. Half of your materials are gone and or not here. And we really didn't think this through. We're going to change 50 different things. Let's chuck it over the wall. You deal with it, right? That's not right.
Right.
It's not right. We've got to do our thinking and our planning out ahead so that when they get there, they're like, oh, snap. Like, you got, okay, you got the materials. Oh, nice site. Oh, my gosh. You've got supply chain figured out. You got a delivery. Oh, my gosh. I love this environment. the bottom line is we've got to create the environment, then people can do their best work. And so we some people say they can't do it, but we've got to move in that direction. I'll be done in just 1 minute here, that we started our own construction company with an awesome developer in Canada called High Street. And our project starts in May. And we've been working on this thing for 18 months and heavy 8 months before it started, because I know there's no way that we're going to do this thing well without a pre-construction effort. So did it cost some money in pre-con? Yes. Is that maybe coming out of feet? Yes. Do I care? No, because I don't want the millions of dollars of risk on the back end. And that's just what we can have pre-con when we decide to do it. Go ahead, Chad and Tom. I'm sorry to talk.
The old adage of it's an ounce of prevention versus a pound of cure, right? You're going to take a little pain on the front to spend that extra time and get all the planning in place so that every day isn't a fire drill when you get to execution.
Exactly. And it's real quick. Jocko Willink has this laws of combat that say, cover and move, which is essentially build the team, simplify, prioritize, and then decentralize command. And what Jocko always says, and everybody respects him, is I'm not going to go make a plan for a subordinate, right? They're going to make the plan and I'm going to review it. So the first planners are making the first plan, and then it's like the trade partners are Jocko Willink, and they're going to review it, make it better. We're going to do the pull plan. We're going to do the look ahead plan, the weekly work plan. And then it becomes this team thing, but we were there first. It's not that we're more important, right? So I just wanted to make that point there that it really is advanced teaming as long as you don't shove it down their throat. Chad, I think I interrupted you. Sorry.
No, not at all. You didn't. And I think, you know, what you're all these comments, and we're seeing some comments roll in through the feed as well, that like, you know, you have, oh, you can't afford to plan correctly, so you'll but you can afford all the pain that comes down the line. And you know, I think one of the things that I know Tom is very fortunate to experience, and I would bet, Jason, that in more cases than not, when you were at Hensel Phelps, that you were fortunate, is that you were working with owners who had a bigger picture in mind and were open to the idea of partnering with you to get it right from the start. Not all, and I'm sure not every project you work that way, Jason, and same with you, Tom, but more often than not, both of you guys, I think, just knowing what I kind of know about the markets that you, Tom, in your case, serve, and Jason, in your case, served, that you were working with an owner that was, you know, probably going to occupy the space, that was probably going to use the space to forward their own mission, and that wanted to get it perfect. They wanted to get it as close to perfect as they possibly could up front. How do we, as general contractors, get owners who maybe don't have that mentality to think, to set things up for success? And do we, even if the owner isn't bought in, do it our way and spend the money and resources? I'll toss that out to both of you to deal with.
Well, Tom, go ahead, boss.
Go ahead. I mean, yeah, I would say you've got to prove to them that it works. If it's somebody that's resistant to it, then you may have to spend a little bit upfront in order to show that your methodology is going to work and get them to kind of flip the switch or do a 180 and understand that, you know, all of this pre-planning isn't, you know, for naught. And we're doing this for a reason so that we can be efficient and effective when we get out into the field. And we don't have, you know, again, like Jason said, it's keeping the beat, you know, making sure you've got the orchestra lead in place and he's got everybody in time and in tune.
I love that. Yep. And I love that comment where if that he or she has everybody in a rhythm. And like it, before musicians even come into practice or play in an orchestra, like the environment's already set up and the orchestra leader, the choir conductor, or the orchestra conductor is already there. I love that. I'm gonna say five things in relation to this. I don't know that we can get people to do anything because these systems in construction are just like we understand in government are more powerful than any one individual to change it, but there is abilities there. I'm going to use a word that Jen uses all the time, tribe. I think one method is to just have your type of client, right? Your tribe of people that you work with, right? That actually care about people and do pre-construction and understand the game. I do agree with you that we need to spread that influence. And the way that we do that is by winning. So we need IPD and design, build, and CM at risk contract delivery methods winning, right? I heard the other day of this thing called progressive design build. And I'm like, what in the heck is progressive design build? And they're like, oh, it's design build done right. And I'm like, when did people start doing design build wrong? Like, what happened? I've been gone for too long. Like, this is ridiculous. I've only ever been on good jobs in my younger career by accident. I deserve no credit whatsoever. but Hensel Phelps, whether the client would let him or not, had people on the bench, had people in pre-construction, yeah, had people planning. They would not do a lot of design bid build jobs, right? And so suggestion number four is as contractors, we just have to do the planning. And if we don't have a long ramp, we have to swarm it. And then there's the one biggest thing that happened in my career that I learned from other people and can't take credit for is we've got to learn to say no. The answer for most things is no. We want you to break ground. The design's not finished. No, we don't have money for pre-construction. So you're going to plan it as you go. No, we're going to undercut the staff. No, we don't have the money to pay for, you know, little portions of the last planner system or a huddle area or this. No. Hey, we want you to rush and push a panic at the end. No, 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 no. And more no's and bunches of no's. I've been asked to do these things, to rush the start of a project, to rush the end of the project, to hurt a trade part. The answer is no. I will not do it. And if a company other than High Street ever wants to do business with our construction company, Lean Built, I'm not trying to be arrogant, but they will do it the people way or we won't build the job.
I love it.
That's just how it's going to be. But if they are into taking care of people, providing a remarkable experience, stealing that from Oakland Construction, having nice bathrooms for the trades, good collaboration, last planner system, people, we're all in. I'm a down girl, down boy, whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm in, like, this role. Like, we're going to ride or die. But I think that it's going to be hard to change from a system standpoint. But gosh darn it, we don't have to do stupid things just because the owners tell us to. I love owners, but if they knew how to build jobs, they would do it. Why are we letting them tell us to be everywhere at once and to start too early and to panic? Stop it. We are supposed to be the calming captain in these stormy seas. Go ahead, Chad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, Jason, everything you've talked about here revolves around essentially the respect for people, right? One of the key lean methodology tenets is respect for people and, you know, making sure that people have the right tools to do the job, making sure people aren't being rushed or getting put up with last minute deadlines because of poor planning. Making sure, you know, we're not having to, you know, work people overtime or don't have the right answers, or we've got clean bathrooms and we've got respect for our trade partners and you're shaking their hands, you know, at the start of jobs. You know, it all revolves around that respect for people, which, you know, a lot of times everybody on the project team kind of has to take a step back and say, all right, what are we doing here and why? Why are we doing this?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, not surprised, but I'm excited, yeah, coming away from this last piece of conversation as I imagine this idea that, Tom, you said it, you got to prove it. You got to prove that it's better. And Jason, we got to learn to say no. And sometimes in our journey, we may need to, we're going to hold our ground. We're going to do the right thing, even if we're not getting paid for it, because we know that ultimately it's the right thing for the owner and it's the right thing for us. It's the right thing for our trade partners. It's the right thing for the outcome of the project. And
Chad, you think of it as an investment, right? You're going to do this. Maybe you spend a little bit of your money up front, but you're going to show them that it works and you're going to be a repeat customer.
Yes.
And the cost comparison is nothing. I mean, the investment up front as compared to the risk of failures downstream is just massive.
Right.
I don't know how much time we have. Can I say one thing real quick with that? Like the Bob Emiliani is a lean expert. I don't know that lean people call themselves experts, but anyway, whatever. He talks about lean. He's an awesome human. And in his books, he talks about one of the main causes for non-lean companies when it comes to people, process, or tools is when leadership is disconnected from the field, right? And this is a lean organization. This is not, right? Yep. And what people don't understand is the effects that bad practices have on the end user. And in lean, we consider everybody customers. Like the craft out in the field is my customer. A trade partner is another trade partner's customer, right? If we actually look at that, we will stop doing these things. And ultimately, I say this for learning, not for effect or shock and awe or being negative. But winging it is disrespectful because we're not the equalizer. We're not John Wick, right? We are not Mission Impossible. What's his name? Ethan Hunt. We are not. None of that exists. Imagine this in your mind. Jason Schroeder. I've been with Hensel Phelps. I've been a superintendent, been a field engineer, been a director, been all of these things, have a construction company, a podcast, books, teaching, training, consulting. And when I get on a real job, again, as an owner of a construction company, do you see me moving towards the John Wick wing it? Or do you see me moving towards the we're going to plan, prepare, and prevent? You'll see me run headlong in the direction of I want to prevent the mistakes. I don't want to figure them out after they happen. There's no way John Wick can kill 50 people with his bare hands in the course of 3 hours. And there's no way we can run a project without planning, without hurting or disrespecting somebody in the field. And so we've got to get back to the basics. And the one thing I want to say is nobody's coming to save us. We are going to have to save ourselves. And it's not a technology. It's not some crazy thing. Aliens are not going to come save us. We have got to get back to the basics of what we know works, and that is training our people, using the right systems, caring and loving people, and making sure we plan out ahead to support the last planners. We know it works, and we just got to do it.
I love it. Yeah, I think it's a great place. It's a great place to wrap up, Jason. This is thank you again so much for joining. Tom, any final questions that you want to channel Jason's way before we call?
Just real quick, that he mentioned something earlier. Jason, were you at the LCI Congress in San Diego last year with Jocko Winnick was the keynote speaker?
Mm-hmm.
You were there for that?
I was, yes.
I figured that's maybe why one of the reasons why he brought it up. I was there. It was one of the best keynote speeches I've ever seen. It was phenomenal. This conversation was fantastic. I could talk to Jason for another hour and a half if we had time. But I really appreciate your time and your thoughts, Jason, and your view on construction and pre-construction planning and, just your whole vibe. I dig it.
Thank you so much.
You're doing what you're doing, buddy. So how can people connect with you, and what else would you have anything coming up that we should be aware of?
Just the normal stuff. So, we love our YouTube channel. Our consultant said I needed to put it under my name for it to grow. So it's the Jason Schroeder YouTube channel. We're starting to do recording of the construction site and our methods there to get feedback, and the podcast, the Elevate Construction podcast. If you want to know who I really am behind all of the fake facade, then that's where you find it. And then on LinkedIn for Jason Schroeder, we attempt to give a lot of stuff away. We're modeling Paul Akers in that regard, that like literally we're just going to share as much stuff as we can for free to benefit the industry and not try to have anything behind a paywall. Not that that's evil. So those are the the things. And then the construction company, it's designed to, we really want to showcase how taking care of people is the best way to run a job. And so we'll get to a point where we're wanting to have visitors and people touring and coming out. If you got field engineer groups, you can come out. We'll train them on field engineering on this large site. Foreman, the same thing. I think Jesse Hernandez is going to come out and do some cool things with us. I think Jen also might as well. And we're going to turn that into kind of a live lab. So hanging out with us out in Phoenix when we start our construction project will happen probably later on this year. So we're really nice people. We'll share anything that you want to have. So just reach out to us. I think we're pretty underutilized in that regard. People don't know how easy it is to call us or email us and ask us for something, and we'll get it done for you. So
you are a giver, sir, and we appreciate what you're doing for the industry. I hold you in very high regard and look forward to continuing our relationship in the future and maybe having you back on to talk about some success in your construction projects.
Awesome. Awesome. Hopefully you'll believe it's well built.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There's a lot of comparisons in there, right? I mean, putting people first. I mean, we clearly there's philosophical alignment, I think, in all. People are always saying like, "Yo, did you get this concept from this?" Look, I got this concept from it being true.
Yeah.
It's just true. You know, that there's and there's a lot of resources that illustrate that, but the data prove it exactly to your point. So.
Yep.
All right, my friend, thank you so much for being with us. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
It's great meeting you.
Yep.
All right, Tom, Jason's awesome, huh?
Yeah, man. That was fantastic. And like I said, I could just keep talking and talking to him. Great guest. Interesting guy. Like you said, he's a giver. There's three types of people in this world, I like to say. Somebody who brings nothing to the table, somebody who brings something to the table, and somebody who takes away from the table. He's certainly a guy that brings stuff to the table.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And it's cool to be around and makes you see all the potential and opportunities when you're working with somebody like that. Not a fixed pie mindset. There's a lot of good to be done.
Yeah, so. And you could see how on his projects, morale would be high. Like he's a guy that he's going to be a rah-rah guy that's going to keep everybody's spirits up. And it's not surprising that, you know, he didn't have graffiti in the bathrooms on his project sites.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Well, cool. So I want to talk a little bit about next week. And so next week we've got Jonte Hawkins and Roberto Gomez, who are going to be coming on. They're both tradesmen turned entrepreneurs, and they've, built safety businesses and coaching businesses, things like that, they're teaching trades at federal prisons and, helping to, make the construction industry accessible to one of the comments that Jason made. We have an inclusion issue. We have a diversity issue. We need more people, we need to pull more people from different parts of our economy into the construction industry. And these are right. Guys that are making that happen. So that should be a fun conversation.
Yeah. Awesome. Looking forward to that one.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you so much, Tom. Great being with you.
Yeah, it's always a good time.
I will look forward to seeing you again soon.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, everybody. Hope you see us out next week.
See ya.
See ya.